Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Just a quick intro to PitchLink. Typically, once the explainer video on your site is watched, the communication plan falls squarely on the visitor's court. Your prospect who took the trouble to find you via your search-optimized content or various digital marketing advertising now has landed on your website and watched your succinct explainer. She's interested in your product. What next? Now she has to navigate your website, go to various links to see product information, detailed demos, customer testimonials, and use cases. That's when she drops off. No one except the desperate has the patience. Build your story, line up all relevant information and collaterals targeted to each ICP and lead them to a cogent near-personal narrative. Capture their data if you so desire, or lead them to your existing funnel to register, all with the public PitchLink feature. Want to know more? Sign up for a free one-on-one session. Our guest today is Lee B. Sells, CEO of Sales Architects, author of the book Sell Different.
I fundamentally hate the word closing. I hate it. And I'll tell you why. You know, we all talk about being client-centric. I just said we need to make clients feel special. And I guarantee you no one woke up this morning and said, oh, I hope someone closes me today. It's a terrible expression. The other issue is for salespeople. I get these calls all the time from executives saying, we have a closing issue. Tell me about that. The salespeople tell me about deals they're pursuing and how confident that they feel that they're going to get them. They get to the final stage. And the deal unravels. Some even ghost them. They stop responding to them. So I then correct them. I said, based on what you just told me, you don't have a closing problem. They said, really? What is my problem? Your issue is in discovery.
Lee is a recognized specialist in sales differentiation. He helps organizations win more deals at the prices they want. Working across all industries and sales types, he creates winning sales strategies for companies around the globe. A featured columnist and a media source on sales and sales management, Lee has been quoted and featured in the Wall Street Journal, CNN, the New York Times, MSNBC, ABC News, and numerous other outlets. He is the best-selling, award-winning author of 6 books, including Sales Differentiation and Higher Right, Higher Profits. A graduate of Binghamton University, originally from New York City and New Jersey, Lee now resides with his family in Minneapolis. Now on to this insightful episode with Lee Sells. Lee, welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you're here and I'm excited to speak about your new book.
Thank you. Excited to be here. You know, today's a very special day. You'll notice I'm wearing my Sell Different t-shirt. Today's the official launch of the book. Today's the first day people can get their hands on it.
Awesome. Awesome. But first, tell a bit about the work you are doing and what responses that you are seeing which necessitated your writing of this book.
Perfect. So I'm a sales management strategist. What I do is I work with executives who say, boy, there's a lot of opportunity in the marketplace and we're not getting our fair share. So I help them, as I trademarked, win more deals at the prices they want. So in other words, not just acquiring new clients, but also protecting margins while doing so.
Fantastic. You wrote 2 books with very similar names, Lee.
Yes.
Why is that?
So the first one was the introduction to my world of sales differentiation, thus the title Sales Differentiation. And then this new one is titled sell different. But I'll tell you, the inspiration and the excitement for this topic began many, many years ago. I grew up in Marlboro, New Jersey, which is in central New Jersey. And when I was 17 years old, I needed a summer job. And we had a family friend who had this idea of pickup and delivery dry cleaning. He didn't own a dry cleaning store. He just had this idea of transportation. And this is 1986. This isn't today. So it was a revolutionary idea. It wasn't universally offered like it is today. And my summer job was as his driver. And I was really intrigued by this idea. Would people be willing to pay more money for this? Because he didn't own the dry cleaning, so there was no discount, if you will. It was a layer of cost on top of the cleansing of the clothes. And I sure hope so, because it was my summer job and I needed cash. So what do you think the answer was? Do you think people were willing to pay more for that?
I would think so, actually. But in 1986, it could have gone any which way.
The answer today would be just the same as it was in 1986, which is some people.
Yeah.
So those who work locally or had someone at home that could handle the dry cleaning, you know, the transportation to and fro, they saw no value in that service. They said, oh my gosh, this is just an extra cost. They didn't see getting their clothes to and fro as a hardship. Now, Marlboro, New Jersey, you may not have heard of it. It's central New Jersey. It's about 2 hours from New York City to Manhattan. And at the time, 1986, many people wore business suits to work, and they commuted to New York City that couple hours each way. For them, they treasured this service, especially if they didn't have someone at home that could help out. So at 17 years old, I learned three really important lessons that I still today passionately believe in and work with clients to address. The first one is that price is not the primary decision factor when people buy. They will pay more for what they perceive as meaningful value.
Right.
So often we hear sell the value, but they're missing that front word, meaningful. And we have to understand the people that we're selling to so that we can identify what's meaningful to them. The second one is know your audience. And salespeople, even today, this is such an important point. They get so frustrated because they're dealing with the price issue every hour on the hour. And it may have nothing to do with what they're selling. It may be that they don't have clarity on their target client, meaning these aren't the right people for your audience. So just like with the dry cleaning, if you had a way to get your clothes to the dry cleaner, you had no interest in a service like ours. So it just was seen as cost. So gaining clarity on who will see meaningful value. There's that word again, meaningful in what you're selling. And the third was to gain clarity on what your differentiators are and to develop a way to communicate them. Here's this word again, in a meaningful way so that the folks on the other side of the table are just as passionate about your differentiators as you are. So I became intrigued by the topic at age 17, but I've never been more passionate about it than I am today, which is why there's more than one book on the topic.
This is a very interesting point you bring out, Lee. You know, there is a lot of talk. If you, I come from the SaaS world, and there is this very oft used word called product market fit, right? And and it is literally about finding exactly that, people who find meaningful value, in your words, in the product that you're trying to sell. The fact that you cannot sell to everybody and everybody is not your market. Your TAM is not, you know, 20 million salespeople in the US. There are certain people who are your target. Correct. And I think that is absolutely, I totally agree with that. So
does your audience like free things?
Who doesn't? But it has to be meaningful, huh?
Okay. So we talked about meaningful value and gaining that clarity. If you go to targetclientsprofile.com, there's a 9-component worksheet that you can download that will help you focus and laser in on who the right prospects are to pursue. TargetClientProfile.com.
Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. So Lee, before we move into Sell Different, I want you to tell us a bit about how you approached the previous book so that we can sort of clearly understand how you thought of writing this new book and what are the nuanced differences in that?
Yeah, so basically you're saying what's different about the second one that's not in the first one, right?
Yes.
So, but if you think about what you're doing here, by asking me that question, you're putting me on the spot, right? I mean, we've only been on together just a few minutes. You really think that's a fair question to ask me? You don't have to answer that. I'll answer it for our audience. Of course it is. See, whether buyers ask you that question directly or they don't, it's on their mind. They want to know what's different. When you're calling on them, what's different about what you have to offer? And if you can't articulate it, if you can't demonstrate it, the decision comes down to what? Price. And that's only good news if you're the low price provider. So let's talk about what's different with Sell Different. You know, sales has never been tougher than it is today. Competition is fierce, and differences in features and functions from one provider to another are so subtle. And so it makes it even more challenging to differentiate what you're selling. And while times are challenging, maybe you have, I haven't seen any executives coming back to their salespeople saying, hey, I know it's tough out there. We're going to lower your quota by 50% and go ahead and sell those deals at 20% lower margin. That's perfectly fine. Nobody's doing that.
Yeah.
They still expect salespeople to win at high rates and protecting margins while doing so. Or the expression that I trademarked, win more deals at the prices you want. So how do you do that when the differences in what you're selling are so subtle, so slight? You need to sell different, which means looking at every touch point, every interaction you have with a buyer, and looking for ways to outsmart, outmaneuver, and outsell the competition. So in this book, I address everything from how you generate leads, how you prospect, how you handle the discovery phase of the process, how you sell effectively in a virtual environment. You know, there wasn't going to be a chapter on virtual selling in my new book. And then this little thing happened, the pandemic. And then it was necessary to have a chapter in there on how to sell different. How you handle pilots and trial programs and so much more. It doesn't matter what you're selling or if you're selling B2B, B2C, it doesn't matter. The strategies that I present and Sell Different will help you to win more deals at the prices you want. Each one of the 15 chapters lays out a strategy and step-by-step in how to implement it. I'll give you a little peek into the kitchen. My first step of editing, I sent the manuscript to many of my corporate clients, people who I would see purchasing a book like this. And I asked them one key question. What could you not implement based on how I wrote it in the book? See, my intent is without picking up the phone and saying, Lee, we need your help. I want you to be able to read each chapter, understand the purpose, understand the strategy, and be able to implement it on your own.
And what happened in terms of response?
They had some great suggestions. And I went in and incorporated all of them, making it super easy to understand and most importantly, be able to implement.
That's a great point because a lot of times we may have very effective advice, but if they're complex and not easy to imbibe and thereby implement, the advice is of no value, right? So
right. And it's easy to write the steps because none of this is theoretical. I've implemented it with sales teams that I managed, and I've implemented it with clients. They work.
Why did you think that the time is right for this book?
It wasn't so much timing. It's a consistent issue that I see in organizations. There's this disconnect where you have management, you have executive teams going to the salespeople saying, you've got to sell the value. You've got to hit your numbers. And at the same time, not giving them the tools they need to effectively do so. So you got them So you got to do it. And the salespeople go, how? Hmm. And so I wrote this book sitting on the same side of the desk as those salespeople, as well as with management, one on each side of me, saying, let's figure this out. I understand the goal you're trying to achieve. Let's develop the strategies. Let's develop the tools so the salespeople can do what you'd like them to do.
Right. Obviously, these are topics and these are strategies that you are implementing. So you knew them well. You are working with some of your clients who are implementing some of them. So, so it's all there for you. How did you actually go about structuring the book?
You know, it's interesting. The each strategy is its own standalone. So, for example, each of the 15 chapters, each one stands alone. Hmm. And so my process was, as I looked at each one of these strategies, A, I didn't want my readers have to spend a nickel to put it into practice. And as you read through it, I'm not saying go spend any money. Just follow the steps in this strategy. Hmm. And then give them the tools to be able to take advantage of that. So it was all around this core premise: ways to help salespeople win more deals at the prices you want.
Mm-hmm. Although these are standalone ideas, how did you actually structure it? I mean, how to decide, okay, this is the one I'm going to open with. This is the one which will go second, and so on and so forth. So how did you actually go about? Because I would presume that there will be a logical sort of transition from one to the other, although they are pretty much independent and siloed.
Correct. Each chapter, there is a sequence. Again, they're standalone, but they're sequential. So, for example, to talk about prospecting at the end of the book doesn't make any sense. Yes. So prospecting and lead generation, those are in the early chapters. Hmm. And then towards the end, I get into customer service and account management and personal development. So it's a very logical progression based on how you sell.
Did you have some of these ideas penned down? Were you writing blogs about these things?
There's blogs. I'm a columnist with the business journals. There's videos. So this is a subject I live and breathe every single day.
Can you sort of walk us through the structure and what sort of went through your mind when you were sort of stringing them together?
Yeah. So again, they're not necessarily strung together because each one stands on its own. But my thought was, what can we do to help salespeople when management is tasking them with winning at high rates and protecting margins while doing so? So I included strategies that, A, don't conflict with any sales management directive. So if you're a salesperson and you read Sell Different, there's nothing in there that is going to put you in conflict with your management. It's not going to conflict with any sales methodology that you have embedded in your company or that you followed. It's a layer on top.
Right. It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
All of us have the ability to make people feel special. If you've ever seen a professional show, like a Broadway show, that show, twice a day, they're delivering that. The actors recognize, even though they're doing this in mass for the audience, they're seeing it once. So you may be having meetings all day long, calls all day long, sending out proposals all day long. But for the person on the other end of the phone, they're having one experience with you.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful, and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it. So let's get into the book. And your first chapter is about differentiating the buying experience, right?
Yes.
How and the buying experience, especially in B2B, even B2C, it's pretty commoditized. How do you actually start putting those pegs on the ground, which will help you stand apart?
Great question. So if I could share a story.
Sure.
My son, Steven, was a high school baseball player with aspirations of playing in college. And during the summer between his junior and senior years of high school, he was asked to play American Legion baseball. Hmm. And American Legion tournaments is where college scouts come to recruit talent. And during one of these tournaments, he hit 4 home runs and 3 doubles with all of these college scouts in attendance. And as a result, the phone started to ring off the hook. And if you've ever been through a college recruiting experience before, you know it's a sale. These coaches are trying to sell you on their institution, but they can't differentiate what they're selling. They can't add a major. They can't change the menu for the food. They can't build a dorm. They can't move the campus. They're all fixed assets. Hmm. What they have to do is sell different, which means differentiating their sales approach. And I'll tell you, some coaches are marvelous at it and some failed miserably. Now, you know, when you first visit a college, as soon as you cross onto the campus, your blood pressure jumps about 30 points. Mm. You know why that is?
No idea.
You can't find a place to park. Every single parking lot says, park here and we're going to tow you, but welcome to our fine institution. Well, this one school we visited, we pull into the parking lot and there's a spot with Steven's name on it. Stopped us dead in our tracks. Then we go inside and there's an agenda for the day with Steven's name printed at the top. What did it cost this university to do these two things? A penny, maybe, for the paper and the ink? But think about what they did. They made us feel special. They made us feel like Steven was the only athlete they were recruiting anywhere on the planet for any sport. Hmm. Of course, that wasn't the case, but that's how they made us feel. In sales, we had that same opportunity, and so many of us miss it. For us, it's just another lead. It's just another meeting. It's just another presentation. It's just another proposal. We forget to make people feel special. We've all heard that sales is a numbers game, and I don't subscribe wholeheartedly to that. I think part of it is. But when we make it a numbers game, one of the negative results of that is we make the people we're calling on feel like a number. Hmm. So there were 7 schools that were chasing Steven. The number one school on his list, his bags were packed, he was going there, was number 7 at the end of the process. They didn't get rid of a major. They didn't change the menu. They didn't knock down a dorm. They didn't move the campus. It was the recruiting experience, how we were being sold. They said the words, yes, we want you here, but the actions didn't support it. They made us feel like a number. Mm. How much did that impact us? When my other son, David, Steven's brother, went through the process, also a baseball player, he's a pitcher, that school wasn't even on his list. Hmm. David is a nationally ranked pitcher and had no interest in even considering that school because of how he was being sold, how he was being recruited. Hmm.
Very, very, very interesting. Just one question on this one.
Yes.
When you are trying to be different to every lead that you have, without the clarity of whether this is actually going to close, and we'll get to that chapter on closing soon enough.
Okay.
How easy it is for a salesperson to continue to do that?
So there's a couple of things. All of us have the ability to make people feel special. If you've ever seen a professional show, like a Broadway show, that show, twice a day, they're delivering that.
Yeah.
The actors recognize, even though they're doing this in mass for the audience, they're seeing it once.
True.
So you may be having meetings all day long, calls all day long, sending out proposals all day long. Hmm. But for the person on the other end of the phone, they're having one experience with you. And if we're mindful of that, and we say, I need to make everyone I interact with feel special, it totally changes the dynamic. I'll give you a little secret of mine. If you asked any one of my clients, how many clients does Lee have? They wouldn't have a clue. I make every single one of my clients feel as if I have only one, them.
Great. So there is this interesting chapter that you wrote about why closing is not the problem. Your chapter is titled The Myth of Closing Problems, right?
Yeah.
Everybody you talk to will basically say that, oh, we couldn't close that deal. What is the problem?
Yes. So let me backtrack a step. I fundamentally hate the word closing. I hate it. And I'll tell you why. You too. Okay. And I'll tell you why I do. And I'd like to hear your perspective as well. You know, we all talk about being client-centric. I just said we need to make clients feel special. And I guarantee you no one woke up this morning and said, oh, I hope someone closes me today. It's a terrible expression.
Yeah.
The other issue is for salespeople. It sends you the wrong message. Close means it's the end. It's not. It's the beginning of the relationship, the next phase of it. There's upselling, there's cross-selling, there's referrals, there's references. There's so much more to the relationship. So I hate that word closing. I don't use it at all. But let me come back to your point about, we'll use the word closing and the issue there. I get these calls all the time from executives saying, we have a closing issue. Tell me about that. They say, well, my people can't close. You mean like their mouths are taped shut? They can't say the words? What's the issue? Oh, no. The salespeople tell me about deals they're pursuing and how confident that they feel that they're going to get them. They get to the final stage and the deal unravels. Some even ghost them. They stop responding to them. Then in other situations, all these concerns, objections, stalls come up and the deals go nowhere. Unless we drop our prices to unsatisfactory levels. So I then correct them. I said, based on what you just told me, you don't have a closing problem. They said, really? What is my problem? Your issue is in discovery. See, if you think of what happens in discovery, right? That's the first meaningful interaction we're having. That's when we acquire key information. That's when we effectively position our meaningful differentiators. When we have issues at the end, it's a symptom of the real issue, which is we got some work to do in our discovery. And so often I'll ask executives, I'll say, so you have 10 salespeople. They say, yeah. If all 10 of your salespeople came to you and said, I just had a great discovery meeting, what would you know for sure took place in that meeting? For certain, you know for certain took place in that meeting. You know what the most common answer is that I hear?
Tell me.
Not a darn thing, because they've never prescribed the handling of discovery. This critical step of the process, they've never defined it. They just say, you know, you got to ask questions and you got to listen well. That's not enough. And what really brings this to life is I ask them, if you also hire 10 people to manufacture your widget, would you let them assemble it any which way they want? Of course they would. Why? It's inefficient. You repeat mistakes. You can't get consistent quality. Don't you have the same issue in sales? When you don't prescribe the handling of key steps of the process, then they get it. I'm not saying write a script and tell them to memorize it, but you need to prescribe the handling of that discovery phase. And if you do that effectively, the end of the process, I'm not even going to say the word, the end of the process takes care of itself.
Absolutely.
And in chapter 7 of Sell Different, I lay out the recipe and how to prescribe that discovery phase.
Great. So let's go back to an earlier chapter where you're talking about finding your best clients, right? So that, I would presume, is your prescription for doing a great discovery. Walk us through what you prescribe there.
Yeah. So when you talk about finding more of your best clients, that's not about discovery. That's part of the lead generation side.
Okay.
You know, I find that so many salespeople, they make sales so much more complicated, so much harder than it is. And there are so many ways to increase your sales, to acquire more of your best clients. And it's easy. It doesn't have to be as difficult as they make it. So let me give you the strategy that to do just that. What you're going to do is select 10 clients. And when I say select 10 clients, these are not necessarily your largest clients. These are your best clients. Best is defined as if you could stick them in a copier to replicate them, you do it in a heartbeat. See, your largest clients may be low margin. They may have complicated solutions that you don't want to replicate. We want 10 of the ones that you say, boy, if we could just stick them in a copier to grow the business, we do it in a heartbeat. And what we're going to do is we're going to have a conversation. We're not sending an email. We're not leaving a voicemail. It's not a text. And so let me set the stage for what this conversation is. So you're going to start off by saying, you know, you've been working with us for a long time, so you're familiar with what we offer and the quality of what we offer. If you were me, what associations would you be active in? What conferences would you attend? What events would you go to? What would you be reading to meet more people like you? Selling doesn't need to be complicated. It's an open book test. If we want to find more of our best clients, let's ask the ones we have how to meet more people like them. During this conversation, you're not upselling, you're not cross-selling, you're not asking for referrals either. The sole purpose is to ask them to take your hat, place it on their head for a moment, and provide you with their counsel. And notice we said at the end, to meet more people like you. It strokes their ego. And you'll find people are so gracious. They really do want to help. And this strategy, I'm batting 1,000. And it's rare that you can say that with any strategy. I have never had any client that I've helped to put this into practice who has not come away with meaningful connections to be able to acquire more of their best clients. I'll share with you a couple of stories. I had this one coaching client, and I gave them the assignment, the If You Were Me strategy, to ask of 10 clients over 2 weeks. And then we were going to have a debrief call. A few minutes before that call, I get an email from the sales manager apologizing, say, hey, Lee, listen, we got really busy. We only got to have 4 of these conversations. And I attached in the email the what we learned from that. 4 pages of notes from 4 conversations. There was no need to apologize. You had a great start to the initiative. Another coaching client is a salesperson that was coaching an individual, again, to have 10 If You Were Me conversations over 2 weeks. And after doing that, he only got 5 done. He had a 45-minute update of everything that he had learned during those conversations. He found out about a technology council right in his own backyard. He didn't even know it existed. And his client said, I could bring you as my guest if you'd like. And 2 months ago, he had an opportunity to present to all of these CIOs who prior to didn't even know how to reach him. One of those If You Were Me conversations he had in person with his CEO sitting right next to him. CEO didn't know about the strategy. That evening, I received an email from the CEO saying, this was amazing. This was absolutely amazing. This is the question I've been missing for the last 15 years of my life. Thank you. Watched it in action today, nearly cried. Spectacular. It works. Like I said before, it doesn't matter what you're selling, to whom you're selling, and I'm not asking you to spend one penny to put any of these strategies into practice. They work.
Wonderful, wonderful. Before we wrap it up, tell me what should be the takeaway, according to you, when somebody reads through this book?
Well, they're going to have the tools and the confidence to use those tools. Back to my brand promise of win more deals at the prices you want. And I'm so passionate about this book, and it's printed right in the book. If you read the book and you say, this can't help me, there's nothing new here, email me your receipt. My email address is in the book. I'll refund your money right out of my own pocket.
That's a great brand promise. Very, 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 very endearing and gutsy offer.
I believe
Lee, thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you. This could have, you know, I mean, I let you off easy because I could literally go into many of the other chapters which are very, very enticing for me, like the one about more than 99.999% salespeople don't do this. That one I read, by the way, that chapter I read. I'm not going to give it away. But yeah, I mean, it's something I am looking forward to reading. And thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you. And the book is available on Amazon and all your favorite book retailers. And one of the neat things about this book that's different from the prior one is, if you like audiobooks, I'm the narrator of this one. So it's my stories and my energy. It was great fun recording the book. So if you like audiobooks, you'll get to listen to me for a couple of hours.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Lee, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books with Park Howell, Shakti Likha, Julie Hansen, Andrea Worlds, and Ethan Butte about wonderful books they have written. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.